the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Let's continue with our discussion of the mind that seeks the way, using Shantideva's The Way of the Bodhisattva as a springboard for study. This morning I will focus on intention. Shantideva was a monk living at Nalanda, the great Buddhist monastery of the late 7th, early 8th century in India. His monastic name means God of Peace, though his fellow monks referred to him as Bhushuku, a Sanskrit acronym derived from words meaning eat, sleep, defecate, as that was all his fellow monks believed he did. Legend now has it that Shantideva studied and recited Buddhist texts at night under the guidance of Manjushri Bodhisattva. Wishing to expose what they saw as his laziness and ignorance, the monks gave Shantideva the high honor of being asked to give a teaching to the assembly of monks. He climbed up on a large throne and presented the way of the Bodhisattva. We're told that by the end of his talk, he was levitating above the throne and eventually disappeared into the sky. Once Shantideva came down from the sky, he was a wandering monk for the rest of his life. Although his talk was given to the monks at Nalanda, Shantideva was primarily speaking words of encouragement to himself and to us. He's also showing humility as he understands that his thought and teaching is not original. He begins, "What I have to say has all been said before, and I am destitute of learning and of skill with words. I therefore have no thought that this might be of benefit to others. I wrote it only to sustain my understanding. My faith will thus be strengthened for a little while, that I might grow accustomed to this virtuous way. But others who now chance upon my words may profit also, equal to myself in fortune." Shantideva is saying that what I am about to describe is my practice, and please join me. Along with outlining a practice for himself, Shantideva wants to let all beings know that they are worthy of being bodhisattvas, or those who seek to awaken in order to end the suffering of others. What is he trying to accomplish in the way of the bodhisattva? Shantideva is spurring us on to compassionate action. And he tells us that in order to act compassionately, we must tame our minds, be aware, and act from a deep wisdom. Shantideva proceeds to outline the practice to be undertaken, the pitfalls, that is, what keeps us from following our intention, and how to surmount them. He continues to encourage us, always emphasizing the need for faith in the Dharma and in our own practice. In essence, Shantideva is giving us a method for waking up. Thus, the way of the Bodhisattva can be seen as a guide for healing our own suffering and for extending ourselves in response to the suffering of others. Shantideva is very practical and direct, and also demands a lot of us. He gives us the way to free ourselves from crippling habits and confusion, and tells us ways we can encourage our wisdom and compassion to grow. The way of the Bodhisattva is written as a personal journey with personal advice to each of us. Throughout, Shantideva stresses the importance of two facets of awakened mind, intention and action. Today I'll speak about right intention in the mind that seeks the way, and over the next few days I'll look at action, specifically at why following through with our intention is so difficult, and at how to tame the mind. We will also look at what practices Shantideva recommends to help us to stay true to our intentions. Shantideva begins to speak of intention as follows. Bodhicitta, the awakening mind, in brief is said to have two aspects. First, aspiring bodhicitta in intention, then active bodhicitta, practical engagement. Wishing to depart and setting out upon the road, this is how the difference is conceived. The wise and learned thus should understand this difference, which is ordered and progressive. First we aspire to the end of suffering for ourselves, then for others, and we begin to see the link. Aspiration bodhicitta reflects our wish to lessen the pain of self-absorption and our wish to benefit others. In turning toward our intention to benefit others, we must give up focusing on our own wants and desires. The importance is in the turning toward. The mind that seeks the way turns toward the awakened heart and mind. Putting the precepts and the wish to save all beings from suffering before what we believe we need to make us happy. We do what is good to do as best we can, with the faith that grounding our life in the precepts will help us to let go of me first more and more. Turning toward doesn't happen once. We turn toward, and then we turn toward, and then we turn toward. This is how we break our habitual patterns of response. And this is what we are doing in meditation when we bring ourselves back to where we are sitting again and again. Shantideva continues, bodhicitta in intention bears rich fruit for those still wandering in samsara. And yet a ceaseless stream of merit does not flow from it. For this will rise alone from active bodhicitta. For when, with irreversible intent, the mind embraces bodhicitta, willing to set free the endless multitudes of beings, at that instant, from that moment on, a great and unremitting stream, a strength of wholesome merit, even during sleep and inattention, rises equal to the vastness of the sky. Aspiration bodhicitta, the intention, is a necessary part of the ordered progression when we set out on the road. But merit equal to the vastness of the sky arises only when we have realized that you and I are not divided. Selfless action liberates both us and others from fear and suffering. What we want for ourselves and for others is the realization that our habits and prejudices, our needs, our opinions and views, are insubstantial and impermanent. We turn toward the understanding that we have invented this separate self. And it is this same realization that we want for all beings. This is what we pledge when we take the Bodhisattva vows. However innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. However inexhaustible the passions may be, I vow to transform them all. However limitless the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it. We don't need to worry about whether we can save all beings. This is our intention, and we proceed from that foundation. There is no failure. We just move ahead with our intention to save all beings, trusting that our intention will be reflected more and more in our activity. Shantideva goes on, "For beings do not wish their own true good, so how could they intend such good for others' sake? This state of mind, so precious and so rare, arises truly wondrous, never seen before." Here Shantideva is saying that generally we don't wish for our own good, let alone for the good of others. We just wish to be comfortable, to come home at the end of the day, flop down and drown away our sorrows with TV or food or gossip or hundreds of other things that hold sorrow at bay. We're not interested in making ourselves uncomfortable by looking at our habitual patterns and seeing whether they lead to harm. But Shantideva goes on to say that it is truly wondrous to experience something that frees us from the narrow view of our biases and preconceptions. He's tempting us. He's saying, "Try this, please." Shantideva continues, "For beings long to free themselves from misery, but misery itself they follow and pursue. They long for joy, but in their ignorance destroy it, as they would a hated enemy. Our habits can be so ingrained that we don't see what it is we're doing that causes harm to ourselves and others. In our ignorance, we do the very things that destroy joy and bring us grief." Albert Einstein said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and thinking we'll get a different result. So we begin by looking at our intention to turn toward the precepts in relation to our own tendencies, and we begin to widen our perspective and our understanding. Shantideva goes on, "But those who fill with bliss all beings destitute of joy, who cut all pain and suffering away from those weighed down with misery, who drive away the darkness of their ignorance, what virtue could be matched with theirs? What friend could be compared to them? What merit is there similar to this? What virtue is greater than the virtue of taming our minds and driving away ignorance? What greater friend do we have than the friend who is able to put down history, opinions, views, self, and listen?" Again, Shantideva reminds us, there is no merit greater than the merit of seeking to end the suffering of others. Let's step away from Shantideva for a bit and look at the Buddha's understanding of intention. The Buddha Shakyamuni said, "Intention, I tell you, is karma. Intending, one does karma by way of body, speech, and thought. Karma consists of intention and action. By action is meant the behavior itself. The action is to pick up a baseball bat. Is the intention to play baseball with your family on a nice summer's day? Or is the intention to physically harm someone by hitting them with it? Karma resides in the intention, and action follows. The Buddha points to six intentions: goodwill or ill will, compassion or doing harm, generosity or greed. Setting intention, the intention to have goodwill rather than ill will, may be seen as a goal for the future, after we get our stuff together. But this isn't what is meant here. Intention actually comes out of how you are being at the moment, and out of a commitment that you wish to align your actions right now with the Buddha's truth. At the same time, we understand there are times we will get lost in greed, hatred, and delusion. Our true intention can carry us through. Our intention is to walk it like we talk it. Intention and action, hand in hand. Pema Chodron, abbot of Gampo Abbey in Nova Scotia, puts it this way: whatever is arising in your life right now is affected by how you receive it. And how you receive it is largely determined by your intention in this moment. So we resolve to act from goodwill rather than ill will. We call this renunciation. I'd like to reread that. Whatever is arising in your life right now is affected by how you receive it. And how you receive it is largely determined by your intention in this moment. So we resolve to act from goodwill rather than ill will. We call this renunciation. This is a potent idea of renunciation. We put what it is good to do first, renouncing our old predilections and habits. We renounce harmful behavior. Will this action alleviate suffering or intensify it? We just do our best, no right or wrong. The Buddha emphasized this need for renunciation when he said, "Whatever a person frequently thinks about and ponders upon, that becomes the inclination of his mind. If a person's thinking is frequently imbued with ill will, his mind is bent by that thinking and imbued with ill will." For most of us, our inclination is to go the way we have always gone, the path of least resistance. The key to learning to turn toward refraining from harm is to be clear about your intention. The Eightfold Path and the precepts encourage us to look at our actions in light of whether they diminish or increase suffering. What fuels the action? What is the intention behind it? If your intention is to satisfy the self, then it won't be easy to refrain from harm. Look at this. Is your intention to challenge, to show that you are right, to manipulate, to gain praise, to get your own way? Then look again. Go back to your true intention, the three pure precepts. cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Intention is also a central theme of the Diamond Sutra, written in the 5th century, 300 years before Shantideva wrote The Way of the Bodhisattva. In the book describing the indescribable, the author Sing Yun gives us his commentary on the Diamond Sutra. He uses the metaphor of adding a magic pearl to a pool of dirty water. The pearl, that is, our intention, cleanses the water just by being placed in it. The pool of dirty water, a mind centered on me, 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 becomes clear water, or a mind in which defiled intentions are subdued, and we are able to fully embrace the mind that seeks the way. What are defiled intentions? Intentions born of the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion. Singh underlines the importance of intention when he writes, "The deepest and most important quality of human consciousness is intention. Our minds, our worlds, and our relationship with all things are wholly dependent on the intentions we have toward them." So we are responsible for what arises in our body, speech, and mind, and for what we do with it. We are responsible. Singh goes on to say, "The heart of the universe is intention. When our wisdom leads us to understand this point, we begin to understand that the Buddha became a powerful magnet of consciousness because his intentions were so pure and compassionate. The world around us changes the moment we understand the primacy of intentions. Good intentions bring good results. Bad intentions bring bad results. The energy of intention is the primary energy in the universe. All energies are derived from it." The Bodhisattva vow, which I read earlier, is based on our commitment to purify our intention. That is, our intention must transcend greed, hatred, and delusion, and we vow to do so. Greed, hatred, and delusion may not disappear, but they are renounced as the basis for our activity in the world. Renunciation. We vow to do our best to renounce the three poisons as the cause that leads to ill effect. The verse of the seven Buddhas has been translated as, "Do no evil ever, do good always, purify your intentions. These are the teachings of all Buddhas." When our intentions are pure, we can see others as they actually are now, rather than as a reflection of our narrow view. In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha speaks of the six paramitas as the key to purifying our intentions. Shantideva also underlines the paramitas as the path to enlightenment and to the Bodhisattva way. These paramitas, or perfections, are the basic qualities of mind that we seek to return home to when we renounce the way of me first. They are generosity, ethics or moral discipline, patience, effort or enthusiasm, and meditation. These five lead to the sixth, wisdom. This wisdom is our natural state of mind, our Buddha nature manifest. I'm going to take a bit of a leap here and put a span in the works so that you don't get too much ground under your feet. I quote Nishijima Roshi. Zazen is completely without intention. We put down our intentions, good or ill, when we sit Zazen. So Zazen is a state without intention. We are not trying to get anywhere. We are sitting with what is. We become involved in Buddhist practice through some kind of intention. Fine. But Zazen itself needs to be a state without intention. You give up all intention, just as you give up all thought. Reflect on this essential and seemingly contradictory point of Zen. We wish to save all beings, and we are not trying to get anywhere at all. Let's end with Shantideva. And now, as long as space endures, as long as there are beings to be found, may I continue likewise to remain to drive away the sorrows of the world. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.